Welcome back to this week's episode of the Event Buzz podcast presented by Purple Pass. Known as the party and profit goddess, Marley Major is part of the LA event planning scene and today's guest. Major is currently one of the top, if not the top, event planners in LA, as well as a small business coach helping owners get the most out of their time, investments, and messaging. CEO of the Party Goddess, a nationally recognized full-service event planning and catering company, Major is best known for her celebrity guest lists and throwing unforgettable parties. With appearances on shows like Fox and Friends, Extra, and Good Day LA, and author of the business guide, But Are You Making Any Money? We're going to have a lot to talk about today, so let's get started. Hey, Marley, thanks for coming on to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm doing awesome, and I'm so excited to talk to you. You have a really interesting story, and I shared a little bit about it in the intro, but why don't you kick this off by kind of introducing yourself, your story, and how you came to be in the event space?
That is a very gracious way of putting it, that I have a very interesting story. That's like what you say when somebody's baby is like really ugly. What an interesting looking baby. I'll keep it as like streamlined as possible. But the net is that I got my business degree from Georgetown, and I decided that I needed to marry this chef that I had interviewed for one of my classes. He was 20 years older. He and I start this restaurant in Pasadena, California, which is my hometown. And, you know, I am so focused, being the good Georgetown girl that I am, I think, on, you know, my goals and hitting my $1 million in sales, and which I do my first year or very first year, which was amazing. And I was getting all kinds of fabulous press about this. And what the bottom line was, though, is that while everything looked amazing on the outside, on the inside, I could not figure out, or it took me forever to figure out, that it's great to do $1 million in sales and it's great to hit your goals, but you need to do $1 million in sales and then not spend $1.2 million because they go hand in hand. And what I really realized was, hey, listen, it's not how much you make, it's basically how much you keep. You know, it's the money between the wallpaper and the wall. And so many of us forget that. And so I, at the end of the day, went on to write a book to solve my own problems called But Are You Making Any Money? And it was after a conversation that I had with my dad, because by then I had started the Party Goddess, and we've done, you know, now I was like telling him, oh, and we're doing this thing for Britney Spears and we're doing this bubble fun. He was like, you know, wait a minute, you know, but are you making any money? Like he was like, this all sounds great, right? And it kind of, this was in the days before Instagram, but
yeah,
everybody who's listening can realize, yeah, it all looks fabulous from the outside. Everybody event planning life looks perfect. At the end of the day, like, how much money are you taking home? And I realized that here I was now with, you know, another company, and I still didn't have my numbers as nailed as I should. It still felt complicated and hard. And I was like, how? I mean, I freaking like, I'm trained for this, you know? And so when I wrote my book, it was totally because I went to, you know, our industry convention and you would get a free pass if you taught a class. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll teach a class for an hour and then, like, you know, drink the rest of the time. But there was like standing room only in the class, like, because it was all about pricing. And I just couldn't understand. I was like, did you guys not hear my intro? Like, I'm the girl that effed up the pricing. Like, what? And they're like, no, I know, but you're the only one that's answering our questions. And it's like, what is wrong with this picture that, like, people don't help each other in the industry or don't answer, like, how you charge or why do you charge? And at first I thought it was just total, like, they're being arrogant or they're being, and then I really realized a big part of it is because a lot of people didn't know how, they didn't have a specific way to charge, you know, and they weren't trying to hit a certain margin. And so that's a very, very abbreviated version. But after I wrote the book, then I kind of things, I sort of, well, I do the Profit Goddess now, which is consulting, not just with event planners, but with creatives, because I find they have the toughest time with just really nailing these numbers, mm-hmm. which is not difficult. And then, you know, we of course still run the party guides.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's amazing. I was going to ask about how you have the title of the Profit Goddess as well, but you just answered it. So,
well, yeah, because it's always the question. It's like, well, wait, what's the connection? Well, it's like,
yeah.
The connection is the train wreck that was me that needed to hang out the shingle. Oh yeah, I'm a party planner. And then, oh goodness, how do I do that better?
So. Yeah, exactly. And I really liked, when I say interesting, I loved your website and reading your story. I really liked how you presented it. And
thank you.
Well, that character you put into it. And
thank yeah. you. What did they say?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And I'm only giving you a bad time, but it's one of those things where, you know, when you live it, it's like sometimes the scars are like still there where you're like,
yeah,
oh, how did I make that mistake? Oh, you know, and then, and what I realized, and this is what experience and, you know, life teaches you, is that you start to become a little bit easier on yourself. You know, you start to just realize, wait a minute, you know, there is no such thing as a home run the first time out. You know, we don't start, the first business we start isn't perfect. And, you know, if it were, then everybody would have started them, you know? So it's kind of, you have to take a little bit more in stride, I think, than I used to. And now I take things much more in stride because you're like, okay, you know, I'll survive. That was dumb, but I will survive.
Yeah. And I think too, that's the draw to you. You're how you present things, how you talk, you're so raw and real. You're not hiding these, you know, like you said in the beginning, where everything looked good on the outside, but on the inside, it wasn't what it should be. And now you're talking about it. And that's what lacks a lot, not just in the industry, but with people in general. Like they're afraid to show the imperfections and learn from it.
Right. Well, you know, having done it both ways and for a very long, long time where, you know, you, like I grew up in a family that's pretty conservative and, you know, everybody like was educated and worked hard and, you know, you then become successful and you get married and you have, you know, 2.2 kids and you have a beautiful house and every bill you have is paid on time and all that, you know, which is awesome. But my trajectory was a little bit different because I am like your classic entrepreneur. And, you know, being an entrepreneur, it's a messy business. And it isn't like just kind of gliding through corporate America up through the ranks and you just make more and you make more and then your house gets bigger. And then, you know, it was messy and it was a lot more like the game of chutes and ladders of like, you have a big high. Look, you got this great, amazing client. And then you've got a big, ooh, God, wait a minute. I forgot that I didn't pay those, you know, quarterly taxes or whatever it was, just because you're, you know, you're juggling so much. And what I realized was that my old life of like, everything is perfect. You know, it's just exhausting. I mean, no, like it's a miracle. I didn't end up like strung out on crack or something, but it, you know, it's hard to keep that up. And finally, yeah. When I just was like, man, I don't have it in me. Like I'll leave it to all my neighbors and everybody else who has these perfect lives. You know, meanwhile, like the husband is whatever with the, you know, massage therapist, but I need to just be like, you know what? It's a mess over here. Doing the best I can. Forgot to pick the kids up from school yesterday. Will not forget them tomorrow as a result, but I got nothing. Like it just is not always perfect.
Yeah, true. That's so true. And I wish people just shared that, especially women. I wish women shared that with other women that it's okay not to be, you know, perfect or what people want you to be.
It's ironic because people think, oh, people are going to think less of you or people are going to. What was funny was when I kind of first, like, you know, you sort of like start with an approach where you're like, you know what, this is getting exhausting and you're just going to let a little bit more of the real you show. And what, you know, now it's all called the story and branding and it's all, you know, much more calculated. But at the time, I mean, my story just came out of exhaustion of keeping up the facade. And you do realize that it's the complete opposite. Like people, because there are plenty of people that are repelled, I'm sure, by me and be like, I would never hire her. But then the ones that are attracted to the story are, I have found, are like your biggest champions in the whole world. You know what I mean? They're like, I love that girl. I would never use another planner. You know, they drink the Kool-Aid and it's a great fit. Mm-hmm. But to me, to get that really strong fit, they've got to know who the real you is. And it's very hard to do when, you know, you're above reproach, because then the rest of, you know, the other people just go, oh God, well, I'm not that perfect. And it's just too intimidating.
Yeah. So I want to, let's talk about the Party Goddess. Okay. So it's a full service event planning company.
Yep.
You specialize in catering and planning, and specifically from, you know, the beginning to the end, conception to completion. And so for everyone listening, which is a lot of people, obviously, in the event space, planning events, what would you say is a starting point when it comes to planning an event? I'd just like to ask this because I've asked a few different people now, and everyone seems to have a different answer.
Well, I feel like I'm cheating a little bit because I was doing my homework for your podcast, and so I was listening to some of your podcasts. So I feel like, oh,
you're ready then.
Enlightened answer based on like that girl was really smart who gave that answer, or should I give my like what it really would be?
Give your answer.
So what I always say to people is that, like, what's your goal? You know, and this is going to sound like I'm copying the girl who had, oh, I forget what it was called, the planning company that she was doing strategy stuff.
Heather Mason.
Yes.
She was awesome. I loved talking to her.
She was awesome, and she was terrific. And it's interesting. I basically am just reinforcing what she said, although my verbiage is a little different. Is, you know, she talks about starting with these, you know, key pillars and like asking yourself these key questions. And mine, I agree 100%. I say it differently, which is I say, like, what's your goal? And when I say what's your goal, people are like, well, this isn't a corporate event. You know, I'm doing a blah, 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 or I'm doing my husband's surprise party. And it doesn't matter if it's a corporate event or not. It's still, what is your goal? Because we've probably all done all kinds of entertaining. And, you know, sometimes when I entertain, let's pretend I'm just even entertaining, like I'm the, you know, would be the client, and I'm just entertaining. And sometimes I'm entertaining because I am trying to get, you know, it's quasi business, and I'm trying to get some new business out of something, right? Well, that's one. You pick your time for your event. You pick who's gonna go. You pick how formal or informal it is based on that, you know. And then on the opposite side, it's like post COVID, I feel like, my God, I could throw a party and say, come in your pajamas, bring nothing, and we'll order Domino's, and everybody would be ecstatic because I think we just all want to get together,
yes, you
know, and hang out. But those, the type of party and everything that flows from it really does come from what's your goal. And so if my goal is, oh my gosh, I just want to see my friends and I don't care, well, guess what? I don't have to say, oh, am I going to do centerpieces? I mean, the answer is hell no, because like, whatever, nobody cares. Mm-hmm. But if my goal is to, hey, listen, yes, it's going to be fun, and yes, it's going to be social, but I would like to have this person hire me in the future, it's going to shape up differently. So that's where I start, is what, you know, what's the point?
Yeah. That's true. And okay, so you mentioned corporate, and I wanted to ask you about corporate events because I saw that you also specialize in those.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask you, because I haven't really talked to anyone yet about corporate planning and whatnot. But for me, when I think of corporate events, I think of business, I think of work, I don't think of fun, you know, in a way. Right. And I get, like, maybe the goal, not all the time, is fun. Mm-hmm. But what are some ways that you like suggest or work, or like, you know, for corporate events that people can make them maybe more exciting, more enjoyable, and not so much like work? That, yeah. Cause that, my brain just thinks of that instantly.
It's like, oh God. Yeah. Well, a few things, I mean, from the planner perspective, it really, I mean, half the time there's not half, a lot more than half, they're so boring. And so it's like, you can't put make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, right? So if the company itself does not know how to freaking have a good time. I mean, I'm not saying that if somebody shows them how to, then they kind of go along with it. But I'm talking about like, they just are not, and then you're going to have a tough time. Yeah. But with us, unfortunately now, having done as many events as I have over the amount of time I have, we're just really specific about who our target audience is and who, as a corporate client, we would go after in the first place, right? And that makes a huge difference, because what I have found is, while we've done the gamut from like, you know, huge corporations like Pepsi down to like the small mom and pop thing, our target audience for corporate events is, if possible, privately held companies, and then if possible, family owned companies. And that might sound really random or really like, well, how many of those are there? You would be surprised. And the reason that I like those so much more is because there's more, I have found anyway, there's more leeway. First of all, there are fewer decision makers, it seems to be. If it's a family company, they kind of have ways to like just get stuff done. Like they know, oh, we have to run it by so-and-so, but whatever, we can just keep moving. You know what I mean? They can keep moving and not lose like their credentials to be on the stock exchange.
Yeah.
You know? And I find that makes everybody's life easier, or they can make faster decisions. And not only can they make faster decisions, but they are able to follow through on them more quickly. Like, if you decide at the last minute and you're like, oh my gosh, I just found this most amazing, you know, mini dragon goat hybrid that will eat donuts and then like spell your name backwards, you know, for a video, they go, okay, great. They can like sign off on it, pay the deposit for it, and run with it. Whereas sometimes when you're just taking whatever corporate company comes along, and sometimes we need to do that in our businesses, but when you're doing that, sometimes you just can't stretch that much. But what I find too is the best way to get people out of their comfort zone is to pitch them, like listen to them as far part of their intake process, like what the goals are that they want out of, you know, their event. And definitely serve up to them some of those options, right? Like, okay, you said you wanted XYZ kind of entertainment. Well, here it is, because it's obviously important that they know you heard what they said and that you're not like, I don't care, that's dumb. But what I find is that you then serve up a couple other opportunities that might be out of their comfort zone that are really cool. But to display them with visuals, and preferably to present the proposal like live to the person. It doesn't have to necessarily be face to face, but like at least over a phone call where everybody's looking at the contract, or via Zoom or something, where you can make this pitch come to life. Because if people can see themselves and see their company, like if you've painted the picture for them, it's not as scary. But it is scary if they see like three lines and a $40,000 charge that they're like, oh, I don't, you know, no, I don't get it. But if you say, oh my gosh, let me explain why this is going to be so great, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden people start going, oh, that could be really cool. And what I found is they might not go for the most extreme thing, but they will go for something a lot cooler than they would have done. And some people just need to be shown like options, you know, and ideas. They just have to know like what's possible. And that's our job, to bring them the what's possible.
Yeah. Now I'm curious, what do you have a specific event type that you like planning the most?
I would say, you know, it's a toss up. I'm hesitating not because I don't want to answer, but because I can think of clients on both ends of the spectrum. I probably, because we've honed our target audience so much, that I can have fun with both. I would say maybe a hair I would go towards, you know, a really fabulous social event, not a wedding. I mean, like, we do weddings and they're great, but, you know, you're just adding to the drama and all kinds of stuff, right? Yeah. So it takes the fun out of like planning it for our creativity, let's say, from my perspective.
But, oh yeah, a wedding would be stressful to me.
Right. And so it might be amazing decor. There, you get all those great feels about like she walks down the aisle and, you know, and you're bringing her the day of her dreams and all this stuff. And that obviously is worth tons. That's why we all get into this business. But there are a lot more things that can hamper the perfect, you know, plan. And if you have a really great, and the same thing that I would say then next, you know, is with corporate, because there's potentially more on the line. Like, I mean, I have had things where, you know, not the highest up executive, but a key executive has had way too much to drink. And you now are like all of a sudden going, oh goodness, we are going to somehow get her home while the rest of the, C-suite group doesn't realize she's not here anymore.
Yeah, now you're a babysitter.
Yeah. But that's, you know, as a planner, you're the babysitter, the fire marshal, you're everything. And then, and so that's why I say just maybe edging ahead is a really cool social client. Because if you get the right one, it's just magic. I mean, it's like Pop Rocks, you know, like they're excited, you're excited, they're excited, you know, just kind of keep feeding off of each other.
Yeah. And you also specialize in catering, which I thought was a great added bonus. Do you have any tips when it comes to catering an event?
Yes, I have many. Well, I started, you know, in the restaurant business. So, and I had gone to cooking school in Paris and in Normandy for 2 summers, even, you know, before I got into my career, and have always cooked and have grown things and all that stuff. And so I really think that the catering and the food background helps way more even than I thought it would. And because I think then you understand from a caterer's point of view. Now, by the way, we do events all the time where we're not the caterers, but we work, everything just flows so much more seamlessly when you really understand how food is. And right. And food doesn't, you cannot have 500 souffles magically appear at the same time. And it's just very risky, right? You'd have to have a huge budget and a huge staff. And there's a lot of things that can go wrong. But understanding cooking and having a catering background is going to really help as far as like what you pitch your clients. Or, you know, if you are in a spot that is notoriously hot with super high humidity, then it goes, hey, listen, watch the dessert menu, you know, you're going to pick, because the eel flottant is going to collapse in either the humidity or the rain. But I think the biggest misconception is that food needs to be like fancy or she. And I cannot say enough that it does not. In fact, my thing always has been, do the best that you possibly can for your budget. Meaning, if you say, hey, listen, I'm going to spend, I've got $10,000 to spend on the catering portion. A lot, I was going to say most, maybe most, but people try to go, okay, we're going to do the salmon or the ribeye choice. And all you're doing then is stressing yourself out, because inevitably prices creep up, right? It's like there's a little bit more, you know, there are more rentals or more this or that involved in keeping that fillet or that salmon hot and stuff like that. And my philosophy is, you know, have the most amazing hot dog bar station that you have ever, anybody has ever seen in their lives, complete with like, you know, crispy fried whatever that is, you know, only served on street carts in whatever, Santiago or something. But the point is do the best, most amazing quality you can without trying to be something that your budget just is not. you know? I mean, it's kind of goes to the like champagne, or what is it, beer budget and or champagne plans and beer budget or something like that. But to me, there's nothing to be ashamed at. I mean, sometimes I might have the money to spend, and sometimes I might just be like, I have done this. I feel like an amazing grilled cheese bar, an amazing Bloody Mary bar.
Like, and people would love that.
They do, because here's why. Everybody thinks people want to go out and like, and that you're going to impress them. Like, hey, I'm going to give you this salmon, or hey, I'm going to give you this steak. Nothing against salmon and steak. But I got to tell you, when we serve freaking amazing lasagna, or we've done stuff with like tater tots bars, we can't even get people. We can't even like clear the line, because people are like, oh yes, like the last time I had it, I can't even remember the last time I had it. And they're having the best time, right? Because it's fun. And they're sitting there eating fried chicken, because they would never be eating fried chicken at home, you know, or at a restaurant. They would feel totally guilty, but they're like, oh my gosh, this looks so good. And yeah, I'll have another biscuit, right?
Yeah.
And it's just what tastes really good. And it boils down to, you know, knowing your audience. Like, don't do that with a group of vegetarians, but do it with, if you know your crowd would totally enjoy that, then do that. Have the most amazing homemade pretzel bar with like more mustards than anybody even knew existed in the world, you know? And mm-hmm. That's when people go, God, that is so cool. And those are the things that are not the most expensive. Like every time, like I can't even tell you the last time that the most expensive menus that we've had, people have like raved about them more. They haven't. They've raved about the ones that were just, this is really cool. So
yeah, that's good advice. I've been to a few events where they've done like a buffet, or the best one was a taco bar, and then they had the Bloody Mary station.
Yeah.
That was great, because you could decorate it, have fun, do everything you want to do, compared to like other ones where they're serving you this fancy meal that's the size of like a dime.
Well, right. Or this fancy meal that, oh, by the way, they don't have the staff that knows how to really cook very tender chicken for 200, you know? But if somebody's going to be so bold as to have a freaking taco bar and be like, we're going to have a taco bar, they are probably doing really good chicken, you know, and really good, like slow cooked, I don't know, black beans it's probably intentional, and they're going to show you that it's simpler food maybe, but the quality is completely there, instead of trying to be like, oh, hi, we're fancy steak people.
Yeah.
And it has no flavor.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so do you have any suggestions for when it comes to running like buffet versus style at an event? Because I know that might be a little bit more messier than, you know, serving. Sure.
Well, so it's same thing. It goes to the point of like, what's your goal, right? So if your goal is, hey, listen, I just want to get everybody together after COVID, and I'm going to do it at my house, and, you know, they're my closest friends and nobody cares. That affects what you're going to serve, right? Because nobody really cares. People aren't going to be dressed up. They're not going to be trying to juggle something maybe on their laps that they don't want to spill, et cetera. Now, if it goes in the category of, hey, it's some business that you want to get later, and people are going to be dressed up, and oh, by the way, you don't have a seat for everybody, which is perfectly acceptable, you just have to be more mindful about, how are people going to eat the food comfortably? How comfortable are they with the people that they're going to be eating the food with, right? And I kind of tend to do, I love stations. And the reason I say stations versus buffet is because, to me, I think of a buffet as kind of like, you know, this very long like runway of food. And the reason I like stations is because I'm a big planner in terms of vignettes. Like, I like everything to be like kind of encapsulated. And I think with stations, you can do that. You don't have to just have like three buffets that are all the same, you know, to knock out your X number of people. But you can do stations. And even if you had two stations that were, you know, taco bars, so that, you know, people on one side of the room could get at them and people on the other side could get at them, you can kind of theme them out slightly differently. And it doesn't have to be such the cookie cutter. Here we have a chafing dish and here we have a silver spoon with which to serve that. So for me, it boils down to more making sure that, you know, I would rather see people spend a little bit less on the food, great quality, but, and a little bit more on, hey, let's get a couple extra staff people, like to speak to your point about being messy, that, you know, can kind of be around the stations and tidying up and picking up plates and napkins and all that stuff and really keeping things looking fresh. But you have to consider how and where and when, you know, people are actually going to be eating.
Since you mentioned like staff, this is just a random thing that I just thought about. For events, I know this also probably depends on the type of event, but would you recommend people outsource and hire versus like pulling in volunteers?
Oh, hell no. I mean, no. I have a very strong opinion on this.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. There's nothing against volunteers. I mean, volunteers obviously make the world go round. And God bless them. Talk about no good deed going unpunished. You know, is here they are donating all their time and and I'm bagging on them. But the thing about, and I made this mistake for many, many years, is people would always say, oh no, we have the greatest volunteers. They'll do this or they'll do that. You can't strip out from somebody the innate knowledge that they have that they are not getting paid. They are not getting paid. They are not typically, they're not like on the clock. Right? This is out of the goodness of their heart. So a little bit goes to you're going to get what you're going to get. Now, does that mean that they're going to be sloppy? No, but it does mean that if they want to be in selfies with their friends, they're going to probably go and be in a couple selfies with their friends. And that might not be at the most opportune time. Also, it might mean that the volunteer is going to have a couple glasses of wine too. That makes it much harder to have workhorses, right? It also, when you have volunteers versus people on the payroll, if you have kind of the natural inclination where some, you know, people are a little bit late or they don't quite do as much as they committed to, you have a much bigger problem because you can't really crack the whip. I mean, how do you crack the whip when somebody's doing you basically a favor, doing the charity a favor to start with? You don't have a lot of leverage. So my recommendation is to cut the budget so that you can have people, as many people as possible, who really know what they're doing and really can run an event efficiently, and then use the volunteers to cut stuff in the background, like maybe, you know, centerpieces or decor or, you know, shipping and things like that, where, like, you know, they can go will call stuff instead of having everything delivered, and things that aren't quite as time sensitive / emergencies.
Yeah. I was an event volunteer for an Oktoberfest before. So you just described me. So I get it. That, I understand.
But I mean, and like, listen, I'm the most compulsive freaking person ever at an event. But you know, if all of a sudden I'm like helping out, well, you know, it's just, yeah, say cheese. You don't feel as badly, right?
Yeah, no. I had a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wanted to ask one more question before I leave you. I just want to jump maybe a little bit away from like the event space per se and towards entrepreneurs, maybe people that are pursuing the event space or kind of chasing the goals that you were. Have any like advice? Just, I'm saying, like, when you started out, do you have any advice for when you started out that you wish you knew that you could pass on?
100%. And it's, we all go into, or go, most of us go into creative businesses or into events or things like this with the goal, because we want to do that thing, right? Whether it's baking cupcakes or planning parties or doing flowers. And what you have to have a really honest conversation with yourself is are you willing to do the other things that every entrepreneur, I don't care if you are, how tiny your company is or how little you make, that every entrepreneur has to do, period, which are things like you know, typing proposals and you're a creative person, you know, and all you want to do is like create the flowers, but you still have to type the proposal and price them out and get back to people quickly and invoice the clients. And because if you don't do that stuff for her, in the beginning, you know, we have to do it. And then later you can hire people to do it. But if you aren't willing to kind of wear those, that left brain, right brain series of hats,
yeah,
you're going to have a problem. And the thing, so many times people think like, oh, focusing on my numbers and all that stuff is boring, or it's, well, trust me, it's a lot better to be slightly bored than like running from your bank. And it's just, it's not that hard if you set things up in the beginning. And one of the things, like for anybody who listens to this, that when you say like, what would I have done just differently? Well, I created this little free series of videos that you can do at like mini.theprofitgoddess.com, and you can just check it out. And there are these series of little videos that get the business owner or future business owner to drill down on some key things, which are, you know, how do you spend your time? Because that's what kills most of us. There's this fallacy, like it's all about the money, the money, the money. And what it really is, a huge part is, you know, how do you make that money between the wallpaper and the wall? And you cannot do it if you are not really religiously tracking your time. So I touch on how to do that. And so some of those key things are, you know, just tracking your time and just having this framework for your numbers so that it's no big deal. You just do it in the background. And then guess what? You can be creative and you can do all the stuff you love, but you cannot do that after the fact if you haven't set things up properly to start with. There's just no way around it. You just can't run forever. You'll run yourself into the ground.
Okay. If you send me that link to what you're saying, I will happily share that in the show notes, attach that, so people can jump over to that. That sounds extremely helpful.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good because it's coming from my mouth of the girl who has done it exactly wrong, like, and wrong over and over and over again. And so it's like, you know, typically people really see themselves in it and they go, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I'm completely doing that. And the idea is just like, oh my gosh, just don't do this, whatever it is, just don't do this. And it, I don't know, just kind of frees you a little bit so that you don't feel so stupid. Like, how did I do? Like, am I the only one in the whole world who did that? So.
Yeah, exactly. At least you made the mistakes for us, and now we can
exactly
figure it out. So thank you.
Very expensive ones that the whole world.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to me. I appreciate it. I know you're a busy woman, and
well, thank you for having me. It was great, and I will look forward to chatting soon.